Episode 1221, The Book Poster, Pride and Prejudice.
I did hit it. Just took a second. I don't know what happened there. Welcome to the Sci-Fi Christian, bringing you theology at warp speed. I'm Matt Anderson.
I am Bandy Bono, and it is a truth universally acknowledged that a Matt Anderson will be in want of a Bendy Bono. I don't know. I should have thought of that the more before I launched into it. So you just read Pride and Prejudice for the first time. And if I'm correct, you've also not seen the movie or the miniseries or anything like that.
Did see the, what's her name? I did see
Keira
a movie.
Knightley.
Yes, I saw that movie, let's say 10 years ago. Aspects as I was...
You know who was Mr. Darcy in that movie? And I've seen it too, but I didn't remember
this.
Yeah,
I do. Go ahead.
It's Tom from Succession.
Yeah, Matthew McFadden, maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, I did know that, but I also, he meant nothing to me when I originally saw that movie. Yeah, so then listening to this book, I didn't remember exactly where I was going, but every now and then I'd get kind of like a flashback to, oh yeah, I kind of remember this, but
right.
Still a great experience. So, how do you want to do this? I mean, I really enjoyed this reading experience, although it was an audiobook for me. Did you read it or audiobook?
I have read it previously, and I listened to it this time.
You know, I might have mentioned this in a previous episode, but the reason I wanted to bump it up on my list is this is one of my wife's favorite books.
And it's a great book.
It is a great book. 5 stars.
I agree. I have various thoughts on it, but it's a book that really underscores what a disservice we have done ourselves in the modern age by trying to just shoehorn everything into its own little subgenre. And what I mean is like, you know, what do you like? What are your preferences? And then the algorithm's going to go and find the movie or book or whatever that's just for you. And it's a terrible way of looking at the world because on the surface, this is not a book for me. It's a romance novel. Mm-hmm. But the thing about it is that this isn't like a book for a particular demographic or set of preferences or something like that. It is a feminine book, but it's not a book just for women. It's a universally great, great novel. And we are losing our ability to think like that because we're becoming more ruled by the algorithm in the media we consume.
Yeah, or even just stereotypes. I feel like there's some men who might hear, Jane Austen or Pride and Prejudice and want to skip it because they think it's just a book for women, but it's not. I think that's what you're saying.
Yeah, there's great books. Like Moby Dick is a masculine book, you know, but it's not a book just for men. This is a feminine book, but it is not a book just for women. It's universally fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that goes to, I mean, the story's great. It's very funny in places. Mm-hmm. I love how well written it is. But the whole thing really hinges on Elizabeth Bennet is a universal character. And what I mean by that is like she is a character who transcends her own work. And she's easily the best part of the book.
Well, yeah, I love, of course, the characters, the story. But it's just interesting how there's all these little plots running throughout. And they all tie together, but you're right. It centralizes around Elizabeth, who has lots of names in this book, don't you think? I think it's like Lizzie. Also, yeah. Eliza, maybe, is also her.
Yeah. Well, there's Eliza. Yeah.
I think they call her that.
Yeah.
But anyways.
But, I don't necessarily mean it centers around her. I mean something more abstract than that. I mean, and I've been reading Harold Bloom's Shakespeare book. And he makes the point about how like there are characters within Shakespeare, Hamlet, Falstaff, who transcend the work that they're in, meaning that they are such deeply human, profound characters that, yes, they're in a plot and, yes, they're in a work, but they themselves are greater than the work.
Like they become real in some ways?
Not that they become real, but that they, as characters, are greater than the story that they're in. So to contrast it, like Mr. Darcy serves – he's a great character – in this story, Elizabeth is such a fully realized, transcendent character that you could take her out of this story and put her in a different context, and she'd still be such a realized character.
I had a question. I wonder if this is what you're getting at, but as I looked over my Goodreads review, I saw that I commented on how there's just something special about the style that Jane Austen writes in, but I couldn't put my finger on what that was. It felt unique. Do you feel like she has a unique style, or have I just not read a lot of this type of literature?
I think she does. I mean, I think that does start to get at what I mean a little bit, in that she, like, you take the Victorian style, so you have a very rule-based culture, especially as she's presenting it, for who can marry whom and how this is going to work and what makes a good match and all of that. Well, okay, let's put that into the hands of a lesser author of her own time. It's stuffy, it's dull, it's not interesting. Now maybe you put that into the hands of a lesser modern author. Well, now what we have to do is comment on it and how it's bad and blah, 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 blah. And what Jane Austen does is she puts her characters into it and she just lets them run with it. She lets them navigate it. And like, Elizabeth is such a part of what makes her such a fully realized character is that she has flaws and she makes mistakes, but she's capable. She's not a victim of this system, but neither is she, you know, the modern feminist icon remade in our image to go and challenge the system. She embodies the world she's in, not because she's ruled by it, but because she's such a transcendent character that she's able to exist in any system like that.
Okay, I think I hear you saying she's a hero within the system that she grew up in, within the world that she grew up in. She's not tearing down walls, but she's overcoming.
She has no need to.
Yeah.
She has no need to. And that's what a lesser author would do. Like, we've over the years at times poked at the strong female protagonist trope. And usually what that is an artificially strong woman, meaning that we, instead of having a character, we have an ideology in character form. And Elizabeth is the strong female protagonist because she's not that. She is simply a character who transcends her circumstances. And she's phenomenal. She's great. And the other characters are great too, but she's transcendent in a way that Falstaff and Hamlet are transcendent.
It's so interesting you're bringing this up, because she is so clearly written differently than the others. But when I left it originally, I was left with the feeling that Jane Austen has just written tons of great characters. But now that I'm really thinking about it, it does all depend on how they play off of Elizabeth.
Right. Right. Yeah, I mean, there's other great characters. A favorite of mine is Mr. Bennet. He's so funny.
Oh, right.
Funny.
Yes.
He's so great.
Well, I mean, one of my favorite scenes in the book is when, I paraphrase, of course, where he says, "I will disown you if you do marry him."
Yeah, her mom threatens to disown her if she rejects Mr. Collins. She says, "Lizzie, you must make a sad choice today, or you're going to lose a parent."
Yeah.
Your mother will disown you if you reject him, and I will.
I love that.
So good.
And yeah, just for both of us as fathers, like, that's the kind of father we want to be.
He's so sarcastic too. And
are you a sarcastic father?
I can be.
I think I can be too. I do a lot of joking.
He makes the comment that his daughters aren't allowed out of the house unless they can show good sense for 10 minutes in a day. And it's so good.
Yeah. The mom, though, that's a whole other story.
Mm-hmm.
But that's back to the system you're discussing.
Right.
Have you read much other Jane Austen?
I've listened to Sense and Sensibility, and I got kind of lost in the audiobook, as can happen sometimes. And so I would need to reread it. But other than that, I have not.
So the two I was left interested in now following up on this would be Sense and Sensibility or Emma. So I just recently watched an adaptation of Emma, pretty recent. Sense and Sensibility, I haven't seen. I did watch like a 1990s movie when I was 16. I'm very unfamiliar with that story. So are you saying, because the story is complicated, it would be beneficial to do something like watch the movie and then listen to the audiobook?
So you could just read the book.
Well, I thought you were saying that it was...
I got lost in the audio.
Audiobook.
Yeah, my mind wandered.
I hear you. Okay. So which one do you want to do next? I know that's not the... This is not the book poster.
I'm not signing up for any other sci-fi Christian books but the book poster.
All right. I'll probably do Sense and Sensibility next.
All right. But yeah, we got lots on the book poster.
Anything else you want to say about this, or should we just tell them what's coming up next?
It's great.
Yeah, so we like it. 5 stars.
I think you should read it.
Recommend. And really happy I finally got to this one. Next up, I'll hit the music. Next up on the book poster, we are doing either Deliverance or Jane Eyre. So I have started Jane Eyre. I haven't started Deliverance. But guess what I decided to do? We had this conversation over on the Uncensored Feed, listeners, so you may not have heard this, but I was sort of worried about Deliverance based on some things that Ben told me about, and I don't have access to the audiobook through the library, and I don't really want to use an Audible credit on it. So guess what? I checked out a physical book from the library. Wow, it's a crazy world. I know, but I feel like I'll probably skim through it a little bit. You know, read it if it gets too, you know, too questionable for me. Flip those pages. How do you like that?
I mean, I don't think it's that. I don't know what I said.
You scared me. You made me feel uncomfortable with this read.
I don't know how.
Something about disturbing.
I mean, that's just one part that's a little questionable. You didn't skip over it.
All right, so I'm getting the book.
That's perfect.
So I'll be ready for one of the, well, Jane Eyre, I'll probably be ready for first, but if you'd rather do Deliverance first, I'm fine with whatever order you want.
I'll probably listen to Jane Eyre next, but it's going to be a couple weeks.
That's fine.
Maybe like 3 weeks.
Totally fine with me. Listeners, that's all from here. I'm Matt Anderson.
I'm Ben DiBono.
And with a Sci-Fi Christian, signing off.
Goodbye.
I think this is it's early in the year, but so far this is my top read of the year, Pride and Prejudice.
It's a great book.
How about you? Of the books you finished so far in January and early February, is this your favorite book of the year?
Probably. I don't know what else I've read. I'm really still just really enjoying the John le Carré books. I read his, Secret Pilgrim. Oh, I finished rereading House of Leaves.
Oh, I've started it and I'm in the middle.
I'm curious what you think.
I mean, I really am into it like a lot.
Isn't it wild?
Yeah, but I feel like when I say middle, it would probably be more on to say like early middle.
But what's funny is that you can't even really judge how far, because if you flip through it, some pages are really dense. Like it goes two columns at one point, yep. And then some have like three words on them.
I can't wait to discuss it with you. It's one of those mind-bending books. And listeners, this is not for the book poster, but we will be discussing it here on the show. House of Leaves by an author I forgot.
Mark Daniel Hefsky. As far as the best book I've read this year so far, if it's a first-time read, I have to give it to Outer Dark by Cormac McCarthy. If it is a reread, I've read Paradise Lost this year, so.
Oh, wow. I guess.
Give it to Milton.
Listeners, it's the beginning of the year. If you've always thought, man, I really want to support the Sci-Fi Christian, but how can I do it? Is there a donation button? Guess what? You don't even have to do that. Just go over to our Patreon feed, which you can find at
it's
Patreon.
Better than a donation.
Yeah, patreon.com/the Sci-Fi Christian. We have three different levels. $3, you can get our Sci-Fi Christian extra feed. For $7, you can get the Sci-Fi Christian uncensored feed. And if you want to be the first person to get our middle level at $5, that's where you can get...
first ever.
That's where you can get things like...
The bird feed.
The bird feed.
And I have a bird feed episode.
Sport episodes, although the one we just recently did is on the uncensored feed.
Why?
I guess it was pretty clean. I'll put it in the bird feed.
It was really clean.
I'll put in the bird feed for you.
Okay.
So... So if you do want to support us here, that's the best way to do it.
A special Olympics episode. If you're really into the Olympics, you love the Olympics, check that out.
Yeah, but nobody, listeners, has ever done the middle feed. They've either decided to come in at the cheapest amount, or they're like, we're all in. We want everything. Extra feed, uncensored, all the sports.
Birds.
All the birds.
We do it. Yeah, people are curious what the bird feed is, so... If you've seen birds, like imagine a podcast about them.
I think we're doing a bird episode tonight.
Oh yeah.
So this is a great time. If you want to come in at that $5 feed and be the first person in Sci-Fi Christian history to sign up for it, today's the day. Yeah. So again, patreon.com/the Sci-Fi Christian. So long, folks.
Goodbye.